episode number 68 over 40 in Vancouver. Hi.
I'm Dale.
Good morning. Guten Abend.
That's Roland.
We're at Archive by Revolver Coffee, at on Revolver underscore Coffee on Twitter, at Revolver Coffee without underscore on Instagram. We're going to talk about
Good Beans.
Remembrance Day, originally designed to commemorate the war to end all wars. The 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month. What do you think, Dale? Did you go to a Remembrance Day service this year?
I did not this year. I have in past years.
I still don't understand why it's not a holiday in Toronto, but it's a holiday in Vancouver where we live.
It's not a holiday in Toronto?
No, it is not. Many people go to Remembrance Day services. Many, many people have them. Many people take time off of work. But it is not a holiday.
Oh, that's interesting. I know with the expat Americans we have in the office, they did not realize the significance of Remembrance Day. Like, there it's, I think, Veterans Day or Armistice Day? No, Veterans Day. And it's nowhere near a big a deal as it is in Canada. And they actually talked about getting some really surprising pushback. Like, you don't know about Remembrance Day? Are you heathens?
I think Vancouver is very more British than Toronto is at this point. Although Toronto obviously has very, very close ties with Britain too. But I just feel that we're closer, and I feel that this whole empire, commonwealth thing, it still resonates for a lot of people here.
Well, that's how I saw it too, with the difference between the American and the Canadian experience. I mean, a couple things happened during especially like the First War. Like, Remembrance Day, like you said, was an artifact of the First War, or the Great War. And
yes,
that was something the Americans didn't really get. Like, they're culturally not as invested World War I as they are in II.
Proportionately, the amount of casualties suffered by the Americans was less. Proportionally, the amount of casualties suffered in World War I by Canadians was super high.
And
the UK is super high.
And the historians say, like, Canada came of age as a country in World War I. So
yeah, it has all those resonances that it does not have for them.
Yeah.
It's interesting if you read.
Well, you know, and Toronto thinks they're the center of the world anyway. So, what do they need to commemorate?
I think we should. I'm not a military person. I'm not a fighter. I don't know how to fight. I don't really want to learn how to fight. I don't really believe in violence. But World War II was necessary.
Yeah.
World War I, I guess so. I haven't read much about it, other than the Canadian battles, but it just seems World War I, the whole shooting of the Archduke of Sarajevo or Ferdinand of Sarajevo and Yugoslavia. That's one of the history books.
Well, the Ottoman Empire. I mean,
it
was the last gasp of the world of empire.
So,
really,
you know, it seems to me that's, in a strange way, that's kind of where we're at today. There's a whole bunch of interlocking alliances, which may or may not hold. NATO is one of them. There's a whole bunch of forces like ISIS, and I hate to say it, but the leader of Russia, who are promoting instability. And I feel that we have a tinder keg like in World War I, pre-World War I days, just a different sort of tinder keg.
Well, I mean, what we have is we have a changing equilibrium of power, as in particular, like, China is ascended. Like, this former Soviet Union, they have remnants of the power they had before, which is not insignificant.
Right.
And I think they're still very much psychologically trying to find their place in the world, like, dealing with a whole bunch of other problems. And then you have, like, China, which is clearly becoming more powerful in the world. And it always comes down to, like, I have something that you may want, too. So I'm going to make sure that I can take it or keep it.
Yeah.
Like, that whole South China Sea, or, you know, it goes by a number of names. But the issues down there, I used to know the different names for it, too.
Spratly?
Spratly, yeah. Like, that whole area down there with the resources, that's
It's Malaysia, Vietnam, the Philippines, China, and probably some other nations. I mean, Malaysia or Indonesia might be in there too.
And you have like one nation that is disproportionately larger than all of the other ones. It's and they don't also have a cultural, but not that. I mean, it's like the U.S. is really strange, right? They have that cultural self-image of being the good guys of the world, but at a very high government level, they still behave like an imperial power. And you can see it with like the way that they deal with like oil and stability. It's like, so the citizens will protest, or at least a percentage of them, and the government will act like an imperial power. And in China, you don't even have, at least to my knowledge, the people in a position of protesting the way the government is behaving, just because of their history.
Yes, yes, and yes. And I think the trick here is, like in any bad habit, humanity seems to be in a cycle of war, punctuated by bursts of peace. Wouldn't it be great if we could get out of this cycle of war? Like, it seems like we're heading towards several wars, more wars. We've had many wars since World War II that are totally unnecessary. They're, in fact, all unnecessary, yet... I look at the idealism of Gene Roddenberry in Star Trek and wonder, what does it take for us to break out of this cycle of war?
I'm that kind of idealist, too. And, yeah, I mean, in all genres, you see that kind of idealism. And... you know, to me, the issue is the whole greed
inequality
thing. Like, and that as long as you have people that don't have any kind of compunction that they live in a fair world and they'll just take what they want and lie to get it or use force to get it, we're going to be in the situation that we're in.
I'm reading this interesting Robert Sawyer novel where they devise a test for psychopathy.
Yeah.
And it turns out that according to the theory espoused in this work of fiction, 2 out of 7 people are psychopaths.
But it isn't just that. Like, consider the
Is it the fact that we are genetically hardwired to
consider
be deranged
psychopathic
murderers and warmongers?
Consider the colonial experience where there was a cultural belief in manifest destiny. We have the right way. We are going
to have that in Canada, too. I know you're referring to U.S. manifest destiny, but we have this thing about aboriginals.
The British Empire.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Agreed.
I mean, I cannot believe that like a whole culture was evil, but certainly like the whole manifest destiny, we have the right to take the resources from these people that we don't think are as good as us. Like, that's not right either. And that has echoes of the whole... I mean, I think that probably started with the Roman Empire, for God's sake. Like, those echoes, you know, of the Roman Empire echo through the whole British...
So the root cause, if I may be so bold as to restate your hypothesis, is the cause of all war is the belief that one person or race or group is superior to another.
Oh, it's not that simplistic. I know. I know. I would put it down to I want what you have, or someone else wants what I have, and we have to fight to keep our it's down to resources, like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Right.
So if we have infinite clean energy, does this not go a long way to solving this problem, if not actually eliminating it in the long run?
It does. I think it does.
Well, there you go. So all we need to do is not kill ourselves through global warming and through warfare and through disease and invent unlimited clean energy, and we're safe. Solving the world's problems one coffee at a time. I'm Roland.
I'm Dale.
Signing off from Archive by Revolver. Ciao, choose.